Hello and welcome in.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio.
Hello and welcome to Science Mixtape with me, Kyle Major. This week, my guest is journalist, science communicator, and self-confessed wannabe Time Lord, Robin Andrews. Robin writes on everything from volcanoes on Mars to climate change on Earth, spreading the knowledge and enjoying all things science. Welcome to the show, Robin.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. So what was the thing you've written about most recently?
has been the sort of snowball Earth idea, the idea that Earth was once a gigantic, massive snowball. And a lot of people kind of dispute that, but I like the idea that we were, you know, this planet used to be a gigantic freezing snowball.
Wow, and at one point we could go back to that same snowball Earth. A little later we're going to be talking about that a bit more, but we're also going to be talking about psychopaths,
yes.
Something you've spent some time researching.
Yes.
And Miriam, today's producer, has a psychopath-themed riddle for us. What do you have for us?
Good morning, Science Mixers. So today's brain teaser is, a girl is at her mother's funeral and meets a guy who she immediately falls madly in love with. She doesn't get his name or his number at the time, but a few days later, she murders her sister. Why? So let me repeat that one more time. A girl is at her mother's funeral and meets a guy who she immediately falls madly in love with. She doesn't get his name or his number at the time, but a few days later she murders her sister. Why? So if you think you know the answer, then tweet us at Science Mixtape.
Brilliant. So have a little think about that. And also later we're going to do a bit of a test on our mental states and see if we are indeed psychopaths. So if you'd like to join in that, grab yourself a pen and paper. But first off, let's have your first song. It's Psycho and Muse, Robin. Why did you choose this?
Well, I mean, being a tiny bit of a psychopath myself and a huge Muse fan, it's kind of the most obvious choice of a song ever. I don't think you could get a more close relation to psychopaths than that. Plus, it's a great song.
According to the Diagnosis and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, 1% of females and 3% of males are psychopaths.
Right. So, I mean, they're out there, but that's quite a low value. Robin,
yeah.
You're currently working as a staff writer at I Friggin' Love Science.
Yes.
Which is unfortunately a name that we can't actually say the full name over on the radio. But that means you get the chance to research all different kinds of science, but you're also involved in some science outreach. And last year you were involved with Science Show Off. During that you spoke about psychopaths. What drew you to that subject?
Well, if you say the word psychopath to most people, they do get this opinion that you're talking about some crazy murderous killer with no morals and everything like that. I just love the way it's handled in like Daily Mail, like headlines. There's one headline that said something like psychiatrist and father of three finds out he's a psychopath, which is just like the you know, that's barely subtle what they're trying to say. But I think it's like a misappropriated term. And when I took several psychopath tests and spoke to several psychologists about it, it turns out I have quite high psychopathic tendencies as well. So I thought I'd probably better look into it. And as it turns out, like astronauts and negotiators and lawyers and CEOs and surgeons and journalists and plenty of scientists are also psychopaths, and they're good at their jobs because they are.
Yeah. So how do actual psychopaths, as diagnosed by psychologists, differ from the public perception of them?
Well, there's generally you get like violent and non-violent psychopaths, which is an important distinction, and they're not all kind of crazy violent people, and they're crazy. I mean, crazy is like a even that term's kind of vague, but, you know, people always see things about serial killers and things like that, and like, oh, psychopath, blah, 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 or...
people always assume, people kind of, they think of psychopath, and they think of serial killers, and very violent people who are completely disconnected from society and are somehow, you know, have this murderous, like, instinct that they need to fulfill, but actually... being a psychopath isn't just that, right? There's a whole other list of things that characteristics of psychopaths. So what are some of those things?
An anti-authoritarian kind of sort of bent is quite strong, like extreme social behaviors. So that could be good and bad, depending on what the extreme social behaviors are. Very low level of patience, generally quite low levels of empathy. So, I mean, that's generally the worst one. You know, you kind of want people to care and about other people. So that's kind of the risky one. I mean, you could be like really isolated or like incredibly extroverted, but I guess the point is there isn't like one set definition for psychopath. It's just varying characteristics that certain people show that kind of deems them to be slightly like outside of the social norm. It's someone who's just extremely outside the social norm in one of these ways or multiple of these ways. So,
and a lot of these actual characteristics are beneficial. Like you were saying earlier, that people like CEOs and astronauts, highly driven people who reach the top of their field, share a lot of these characteristics.
Yeah.
And what are the ones that we kind of think of as beneficial?
Great comparison, really. Someone made to me once was James Bond and like Dr. No, and most of the villains sort of thing are both psychopaths. It's just they use that kind of psychopathic instinct for very different reasons. So really, like, I guess as long as someone is kind of morally sound in some way or on the right team, psychopaths are quite useful, especially if they're doing things that other people probably would hesitate doing to kind of get ahead. Of course, that can mean that you get, you know, ruthless CEOs and, you know, a lot of people at the head of like quite wealthy companies generally tend to be psychopaths, and it's good for them, but maybe not good for, you know, other people. So it depends entirely on the person's like moral fiber, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, we're talking here about people either being psychopaths or not being psychopaths in this binary way.
Yeah.
Actually, the like psychopathy is on this kind of sliding scale of disorder. Some people have some psychopathic tendencies but are not, you know, what someone would consider a clinical like psychopath. Do you think that is unique to this disorder, or is that shared with other kind of psychological disorders, or is it just more prevalent in when dealing with psychopaths?
I think like the problem with it is it's such like a nebulous definition that no one's really sure if there is a sliding scale. It's multiple characteristics and things, and also, you know, it's part of this like so-called dark triad of personality traits, the other one being narcissism, which is like this relentless self-promotion essentially and belief, and the other one is Machiavellianism, which you know, it's the ability to kind of manipulate your way into things. And apparently, like, many studies have kind of shown that if you're actually quite psychopathic and quite Machiavellian, you actually generally do quite well out of life because you're essentially impatient to get what you want, and very convincing. If you're a narcissist, though, apparently it just comes up as too, you know, people just think you're a bit of an arse.
A bit full of yourself. Yeah.
So, yeah.
it's interesting that you're saying this is part of this kind of dark triad, and that actually just having the characteristics of a psychopath doesn't necessarily make you a bad person. And maybe it's actually having some other Machiavellian or narcissistic characteristics that actually, that's when people start to kind of divert from social norms and become something that we then think of, you know, traditionally as a psychopath, someone who is who ends up, you know, having murderous intent and that sort of thing, because that's how people generally think of psychopaths. So we're actually going to take a test in a little while to see how psychopathic we all are. But first, we're going to have your second song, which is called Feel It Still from Portugal the Man. Why did you choose this?
It randomly came up on Spotify, and I just thought it was one of like, the funkiest, coolest tracks I heard in ages. And I don't know, everyone needs to hear it, I think.
On myself, pick out dust them all, put them back up on the shelf. Just my little baby girl is in need. Am I coming out of left field? Ooh, I'm a rebel just for kicks. I've been feeling it since 1966. Might be over now, but I feel it still.
Hello. So we've got another fact that there, what's that you've got?
A study from Macquarie University in Sydney has proven a theory that psychopathic personality disorder can be linked to impaired olfactory processing, or in layman's terms, smelling ability.
Yeah, well, that's kind of weird, right? Psychopaths can't smell. And Robin, you were just saying that you go onto Google Auto,
yeah.
autocomplete, and you get some weird answers. And I've just put up there, it just says, why do psychopaths, and then see what it comes up mm-hmm. with. And the first one is kill, which yep. is kind of obvious. The next one is, why do psychopaths exist? And then, why do psychopaths stalk their victims? And then, why do psychopaths stare?
Yeah, I think if that's not on... An anonymous browsing that might be going through your search history. So
that's fine. I've been on far worse sites. I'm sure I'm on a list somewhere. Given that I order guar gum and all sorts of weird things to the house.
Well.
We're going to try and take this test to find out if you're a psychopath. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go through a list of questions. And what we'll try and do is, if you strongly agree, you're going to give yourself 4 points. If you agree, you give yourself 3 points. If you disagree, you give yourself 2 points. And if you strongly disagree, you just give yourself 1 point. Okay, so strongly agree, 4, agree, 3, disagree, 2, strongly disagree, 1. Okay, so the first question is, I rarely plan ahead. I'm a spur of the moment kind of person. What do we think? Strongly agree, disagree, strongly disagree.
I'd strongly agree with that.
Yeah? Okay, so I've gone for agree. Miriam, what have you said?
Kind of like disagree.
Okay, right. Okay, so we're already off to a start. So I'm just going to go through the rest of them and then we'll see at the end how everybody did. Okay, so number two is, cheating on your partner is okay so long as you don't get caught.
Definitely disagree. Oh my God.
Straight up. I'll disagree.
All right. Three, if something better comes along, it's okay to cancel a long-standing appointment. Okay. Number four, seeing an animal injured or in pain doesn't bother me in the slightest. So remember, this is strongly agree, you give yourself 4 points, agree, 3 points, disagree, 2 points, strongly disagree, 1 point. Number five, driving fast cars, riding roller coasters, and skydiving appeal to me. Number six, it doesn't matter to me if I have to step on other people to get what I want. Number seven, I'm very persuasive. I have a talent for getting other people to do what I want. Eight, I'd be good in a dangerous job because I can make my mind up quickly. Nine, I find it easy to keep it together when others are cracking under pressure. 10, if you're able to con someone, that's their problem. They deserve it. 11, most of the time, when things go wrong, it's somebody else's fault, not mine. Okay, so that's the end. So you had 11 questions, and if you're there, you're going to add up your scores, see what you got out of 44, the answers will be. So I ended up getting 25. So I think that makes me kind of slightly over 50% of a psychopath.
I only got 20.
Oh, only 20?
I know.
Well, there you go, you know, slightly less psychopathic. And Robin, what did you end up getting?
I just added up wrong because it's Saturday morning. My brain just derped.
Okay.
I'll get back to it in a second.
We'll get back to that. But I think what this stresses is that you're kind of... there is a sliding scale because this is giving a percentage. You know, some people have some characteristics that they think might be okay and some people would deem that psychopathic. Another one have other characteristics that would maybe deem them as psychopathic. Mm-hmm. But it's more a collection of all of these together that determines whether you're a psychopath.
39?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so that's pretty high.
Yeah. That is quite high.
That's quite high compared to what we've got. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, okay. I can only apologise, but then I might not mean that.
I mean that's fine. Don't apologise. Never apologise for who you are. I think that's the take home message. Okay, so I wonder how people did at home. So if you did your quiz with us and you've got your answers, do tweet in to @sciencemixtape and we'll have a look and see how many psychopaths we have in our audience. What we're going to do next is go on to your next song, Robin, and that is Dean Martin with Ain't That a Kick in the Head. Why did you choose this one?
Because there is hints towards the violent psychopath with it, but it's also a really good song, and if people haven't heard it, then I don't know what they've been doing.
How lucky can one guy be? I kissed her and she kissed me. Like the fella once said, ain't that a kick in the head? The room was completely black. I hugged her and she hugged back. Like the sailor said, quote, ain't that a hole in the boat? My head keeps spinning. I go to sleep and keep grinning.
On Earth, a volcano erupts on average every 6 days.
That's quite frequently, actually. I thought it would have been less than that. But every 6 days. So volcanoes, we're talking about volcanoes, which is a bit of a impromptu segue. Because, Robin, you were originally a volcanologist. What did you end up studying?
Well, I did an undergrad in geology, but I did a doctorate in volcanology. Just because I genuinely, since I was like 9 or 8 or something, I've always wanted to... like, do volcanoes, because they're just ridiculous, and I'm pretty sure, you know, a volcano in a Zelda game when I was younger encouraged me to go and seek volcanoes out, because they're just mad, fiery, explosive mountains.
Yeah, I mean, Zelda Ocarina of Time, yeah, the Death second Mountain. Dungeon, Death yeah. Mountain, yeah, of course.
I'm pretty sure that was it.
The Dodongo's Cavern, right?
Yep.
Yeah, see? Okay. I would have liked to be a volcanologist from that as well. But, so what were you specifically looking at? You were looking at a particular type of volcano or lava flows or what was it?
Well, I was looking at the most unpredictable kind of volcanic eruption, which involves like water and ice and magma. They often happen around these things called Mar volcanoes. And they're actually the second most common volcano anywhere, but they're so unpredictable because they're sort of, you know, nuclear weapon explosions in miniature without the radiation. And they're almost impossible to predict. And I think they kill more people than any other kind of volcanic eruption. They just release a lot of heat. And in fact, if you're standing close enough to one of these when it goes off, you'll sublimate, which means you'll turn immediately into a gas, not go through the liquid phase, because they're that hot.
Wow. What's a Mar volcano? When I think of a volcano, I think of like a cone, you know, like Mount Fuji, right?
Yeah.
It's like a cone with some snow on the top and there's smoke coming out of it. Like, that's a volcano,
yeah,
right?
So classic volcano.
How is that different from... or a Mar volcano is different from that, what I think of as a volcano?
Well, Mar volcanoes are basically like explosion craters. They're actually depressions rather than mountains, so they're kind of the opposite. They're just big holes in the ground. And a lot of the stuff I did for my doctorate was about comparing them to nuclear weapons explosions, because the debris field is really similar and where the energy goes is really similar. And they can occur anywhere on Earth and outside of Earth, just anywhere where you've got a lot of heat and a lot of water or ice mixing together in a certain way. And they're really badly understood. Like, no one really knows how they work.
So this explosion happens because, like, magma comes into contact with water or ice. So why is that more dangerous than just like a normal volcano?
Well, because you don't see the volcano. Like, the volcano doesn't exist before it erupts. Like, normally you have something like Mount Fuji or Mount St. Helens or, you know, Hawaii's Kilauea, and there's this huge mountain or island you can see and it's erupting, or it will erupt from that point. These appear just anywhere, essentially, where you've got magma beneath the surface and a sort of coolant. So they can suddenly explode and set off another series of explosions, and some can be enormous and some are like just relatively small. They're really, really unpredictable in terms of like timing, energy and everything. So, I mean, if you don't really know where the volcano is before it erupts, that's kind of a problem.
But so you said to me earlier, there's a word which is phreatomagmatic.
Phreatomagmatic.
Phreatomagmatic,
yes,
right? So this is the scientific name for this type of explosion where magma mixes with water and it becomes very explosive.
Yeah.
It happened quite recently, actually, right? There was an explosion on Mount Etna that some BBC journalists were caught up in. That was this kind of explosion, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, they were really, really lucky to be alive. If anyone hasn't seen the footage, by the way, go onto the BBC's website and check it out, because it is terrifying and kind of awesome at the same time, because they survived. And they were up filming Mount Etna oozing lava, which it's been doing for a few days now, quite spectacularly. And suddenly some of the snow got mixed in with the magma, and it couldn't, you know, the very strange physical quirk, it exploded and set off a series of explosions and, you know, lava blebs and rocks that are like thousands of degrees hot on the surface sort of thing were just flying towards them. Their jackets have been like got holes pierced through them, people like bleeding from their head and everything. They're really, really lucky to be alive, because that's sort of thing that normally kills most people. Yeah, and that was a phreatomagmatic eruption.
Wow. So in studying volcanoes, Did you ever have any close calls like that? Was there any a time when you thought, well, maybe we should leave?
Yeah, but funnily enough, none of it's ever to do with the actual volcano. It just happens to be what's around it. So I fall into quicksand, like genuine quicksand, which is the only thing I've seen in movies, which is exactly like, you know, it is in real life. The more you struggle, the more you sink. And that was weird.
Wow.
And rattlesnakes are everywhere over lots of volcanoes for some reason. And I keep tripping over them or almost sitting on them. And once I was shot at, because as it turns out, in places like Canada and America, if there's a bit of barbed wire around anything and it says trespassers where we shot, they actually mean it. Like 100% they do mean it.
Wow.
So but the volcanoes have been fine. We've got a great relationship.
So you said America and then somewhere else. Where did this studying end up taking you? Where did you go to visit these volcanoes?
I've been to Japan a lot. Apart from that Japan is the coolest country. It's like a land of contradictions of like future and past, and it's gorgeous and everyone is amazing. The volcanoes there are pretty good too. I lived in New Zealand for a while, which is the strangest place I've ever been. It was the most beautiful place I've ever been, but it was so far removed from everything. It was like, you know, it was like a gorgeous sort of Tatooine or something. It was really strange. I've been to America a lot too. Normally all the explosions for my PhD happened in America. We buried TNT and blew up craters in the ground to simulate these eruptions sort of thing. Top tip, you can't get explosive residue off your coat very easily. So make sure you don't wear the same coat going through airport security because it rings some alarms.
Okay. Yes. Well, yeah, I mean, that's quite interesting. So been shot at and been pulled aside for you know, explosives in America.
Yeah, that was unfortunate.
It's risky, not just in the volcanoes.
Yes.
All the other things around it.
Volcanoes are quite lovely, really.
So I've always had this question. What happens if you fall into a volcano? Like, what happens if, like, an old school proper volcano with lava coming
like Mount
out
Doom
of it
or something? Yeah.
You fall into it, what happens?
It's really grim. It's basically lava is like really, really, it's a lot thicker than you think. It's like custard times a million or something. You know, you don't just sink in and that's it. You actually get stuck. First thing that happens is all the water in your body goes to the outside of your skin to cool yourself off. But it happens so quick that it can actually like explode your skin around yourself, and you'll be breathing in acidic gases, and you'll pass out, and you know, it will actually kind of leatherize the skin underneath because it will just cook it essentially without any of the water. So, and this takes like 2 minutes. So it'll take 2 minutes to kind of melt away. You don't just sort of fall down. Oh, and the worst thing is if you've got any sort of trapped gases in your stomach or even in your head, it can boil and explode. So basically,
I mean,
don't do it, really bad.
How did they find this out? I mean, is this an example of someone doing it? How do you figure out that that's what happens when you fall into lava?
Well, as it turns out, a group of scientists, or maybe it's hard to tell if they were scientists or not, but anyway, people with a question got lots of sort of dead organic matter, mostly made of pigs. I think got whole pigs, actually. They just chucked it into a lava lake. I think it's the Erta Ale volcano. And they just watch what happens. And, you know, you can see these really, really grim things happening. But in fact, actually, it's like, you know, if you look up the signs of what happens when you get burnt, or if you accidentally pour kettle on you or something, it's basically the same, but, you know, just being surrounded by something that's got the consistency of custard and not water. So it's that, but a lot slower. It's the worst way. If you're going to go by volcano, go by one of those pyroclastic flows, because it will freeze you in position, and you can pick any kind of ridiculous, you know, action pose you want, and then archaeologists will dig you out, and you'll be using them for millennia.
So pyroclastic flows, this is another type of eruption, and that's the one that buried Pompeii, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And this is just like a hot cloud of dust and rock and
it's basically like the volcano's equivalent of burping really loudly. I mean, it's mostly hot air. It's just surrounded by like a cloud of dust and lava, and it's these things are so hot they can reach almost supersonic speeds. You know, almost faster than the speed of sound sometimes, and they heat up the surrounding environment to like 500 degrees at least. Even if you're nearby one of them, it's really hot. And, you know, if the density is low enough, they can actually bounce across water. So they kind of chase you across water. They are very spectacular to watch, but you want to be miles away when they go off. But again, that's kind of the problem. You don't really know when it's going to happen.
So we've got lava flows. Mm. We've got Frieto magmatic eruptions,
yes.
Pyroclastic flows, all very dangerous.
Yeah.
Being a volcanologist is a hazardous job, quite apart from all of the snakes. And
yeah, I'd watch out for the snakes. They're the worst, though. They sneak up on you.
The American Transport Authorities, or
yeah,
TSA, right?
They're just doing their job.
Cool. So let's have your next song after that. You've chosen Tears for Fears and Everybody Wants to Rule the World. Why?
Well, as it turns out, people that are quite psychopathic tend to be quite Machiavellian too. And hand in hand, they go with people that want kind of power. So it kind of seems appropriate.
Cool new metamaterial.
Dinosaur family tree has been completely rearranged.
New cloud type has been discovered.
Arctic sea ice hits a new low.
Snowball Earth was created by a massive volcanic eruption.
First charter flight to the Southern Lights.
Wow, okay, so let's have the first charter flight to the Southern Lights. What's happening there?
Okay, so on Thursday was actually the World Meteorological Day. And on this day, the World Meteorological Organization unveiled the new cloud types. And one of those cloud types was a rare type called Asperitus. So the last time the International Cloud Atlas was updated was 30 years ago. And so they discovered a new type of cloud. And how they found it was that members of the society would send in pictures and they spotted a new pattern. And then that's how they discovered a new cloud type. And so why is this important? Well, because we want to be able to forecast the weather. And if we understand clouds, then we better understand the weather.
So this is like sourced from lots of people tuning in. That's kind of like this.
It's really cool. It's like a huge project.
Science. Yeah.
Citizen science thing almost.
Yeah, and there's quite a lot of stuff that's happening with that at the moment. Like the one thing I saw was the big one where people are classifying galaxies.
Yeah.
And so this is when people can go onto a website and they can quickly learn how to classify galaxies into one thing or another. And then they're shown lots of pictures. And if thousands of people are doing it, they end up classifying millions of galaxies, which is something that one scientist on his own can't do.
I like that you can get a species of cloud. That seems kind of curious.
Yeah, it's really
like
cool,
it's evolving,
right?
Or something.
Yeah.
Actually, talking of evolving, nice segue. You're saying that the dinosaur family tree has been completely reorganized.
Yeah.
Why is that? What
awesome.
Have they done?
Well, basically, for 130 years, dinosaurs are divided into two groups based on just what their hips look like, which seemed quite weird to me when I learned about it. Like, that's the only thing you're dividing them up. So on one side you've got something like Stegosaurus and Triceratops. On the other side you've got T-Rex and Velociraptors and like the Brontosaurus, like the long neck kind of things. And it always seemed like a really random grouping. So a graduate student from Cambridge just went through and looked at all these other kind of things you could look at, like teeth and jaw shape, and basically the group, including T-Rexes and Velociraptors and the things that actually turned into birds, have now completely switched sides on the family tree. So they're more closely related to things like Triceratops and Stegosaurus and things, it's like saying, like, I think I saw this comparison about cats and dogs, and basically, like, it's like switching them around on an evolutionary. It's that level of change, like a massive, like 180 million years worth of evolution has been completely on the wrong side of the family, essentially.
So, and this is because they were just using one thing.
Yeah, their hip shape.
Which is the hip shape. And that's kind of why they think that dinosaurs evolved into birds, was that this kind of hip is similar.
Yeah, it's confusing though, because like the dinosaurs that evolved into birds were part of the lizard-hipped group and not the bird-hipped group, which really bugged me.
Right.
And now that's been fixed.
I see, right.
So school children everywhere are fine now. Problem solved.
Okay. That's good. It was always something I was very concerned about. I read about this very cool new metamaterial. And so this is researchers at Boulder in Colorado. Mm. And they've designed a new plastic film that can cool down surfaces using no energy and in broad daylight. And so this seems to go against the laws of thermodynamics. But what they've actually done is they've achieved it by modifying the way the film interacts with light, and that's the idea of what a metamaterial is. A metamaterial is one where the structure of the material dominates how it interacts with light, and not the material itself. And so some of these materials actually exist in nature. if you look at a butterfly's wing or a beetle case, some of those like iridescent colors are actually due to tiny structures on the surface, not the material it's made from. It's not the color from the material. The color comes from the structure. And what these researchers have done is embedded small glass microspheres into this plastic film. And that means that the surface radiates away heat in the infrared, and then that cools down the material. And so, I mean, this is great because, firstly, because it appears to go against the laws of physics. You just have something sitting out in the sun and it cools down, which is just magic. And the other thing is it can have all sorts of energy applications. You know, as soon as you have a temperature difference, you can extract energy and things like improving the efficiency of solar cells, because actually one of the major problems with solar cells is that they get hot and then they become inefficient. And so you want to cool things down and make sure that they're actually working within their optimum like temperature so that they can extract the most energy possible.
Yeah.
Really cool.
That's cool.
So what else did you have, Mary?
So there was the first commercial flight to see the Southern Lights. That happened actually, they landed yesterday. So there was 130 passengers on this plane. It was an 8-hour flight and they got to see the Southern Lights rather than the Northern Lights, which I found really, really cool. You can also check out the pictures that they took from the flight. If you use the hashtag flight to the lights, and then you can see the really cool pictures that they took on the flight. So it, for an economy like flight, it would have been $4,000 just to be on that flight to see the Southern Lights. But yeah, that's really cool because so how the Southern Lights actually work is that the Earth has a magnetic field and the sun spits out loads of charged particles, and those charged particles go towards the Earth and they follow it like a spiral kind of path along our magnetic field around the Earth, and then they hit our atmosphere and then it basically causes loads of cool light patterns when it heats up our atmosphere.
It's like the same as Northern Lights.
It's the same thing. It's just on the South Pole.
Yeah. We're really lucky, actually, because only planets and things with a magnetic field would have this. So if you travel to other planets and they're really exotic and different, most of them wouldn't have anything like this because they don't have a magnetic field. So
It's the magnetic field.
It's the magnetic field that's responsible. Well, and the sun, but
that
you need
funnels
both.
The particles in, yeah. so that they can explode. Cool. So I mean, they get funneled in at the North Pole as well, where unfortunately Arctic sea ice has hit a new low. But so this is actually the US's National Snow and Ice Data Center, and kind of in combination with NASA observing things via satellite, have released that the Arctic sea ice reached its peak on the 7th of March.
Yeah.
But this is the lowest level it's been since they started monitoring sea ice in 1979. And they're blaming this on a very warm autumn and winter. And the air temperatures have been nearly 2.5 degrees warmer than normal. And kind of this is a real problem because this is a bad start to the thawing season. So it's now starting to melt.
Yeah.
And the summer minimum is really important. This is how far the ice retracts to the North Pole in the summer, and losing all of the sea ice can have a real problem in runaway heating effect.
Yeah.
Because actually the ice caps reflect a lot of the light and they prevent overheating. So
it's like a reflective shield, really.
Yeah.
You know, without it, the world will warm a lot quicker.
So this is just another indicator and a long line about him is that actually things are getting worse and we need to do something about climate change.
Yeah.
Which is...
Good luck, everyone.
So what else had you seen today, Robin? You were talking about...
Snowball Earth.
Snowball Earth, which is very much linked.
Yeah. Snowball Earth is this really wonderful idea that 717 million years ago, which is quite a long way ago, where the whole Earth was like completely frozen over. And it's never happened before or since. And people were really unsure as to how it might have happened. And the strongest theory now is that there was a huge volcanic eruption on a supercontinent called Rodinia, which is comes from the Russian word for motherland. And it ejected so much sulfur dioxide into the atmosphere, which is like a reflector of sunlight, essentially, that it actually cooled the planet enough when it was already quite cold. The ice kind of moved towards the equator and then just kept reflecting more and more light. So the opposite of what's happening in the Arctic, basically. And the planet just got so cold, it got locked into it. And the only way that the Earth managed to break free of that, because if it didn't, then we wouldn't be here today, was that when the supercontinent broke up, as they always do, the marital issues or something, there is enormous sort of undersea volcanic eruptions, which release a lot of carbon dioxide, which is that classic global warming kind of greenhouse gas. And it released so much, it actually melted the ice and
broke free. So volcanoes were responsible for freezing the world and boiling it, which I thought was pretty cool.
That's amazing. But we have to bear in mind that this was over millions and millions and millions of years. So it's kind of the same process that we're seeing at the moment, this when it was able to heat up the Earth by releasing carbon dioxide. But this happened over such a long time, whereas what we're seeing now has happened over...
We're changing the climate 170 times faster than has ever been recorded. And that's the problem. It's not like, oh, it's 1 degree or whatever. It's the rate of... If you're in a car and you suddenly start accelerating 170 times the rate of acceleration you're at, that you'll notice that as something quite horrific, which is essentially what the planet is experiencing with the greenhouse gases.
So this is something you've been writing a lot about with IFL Science, but we're going to... first, we're going to have your fifth song, which is Slip Away by Gabrielle Alpin. Why did you choose this?
I just think she has an amazing voice, and you know, it's like a really sort of smoky kind of cool voice, and she was the one responsible for the John Lewis advert a few years back, but it's just a great voice and a great song.
Locked inside my mind, passing time with nothing to lose, trying to find a reason to fight with nothing to prove. I've been waiting for the light to glow.
One in five CEOs are psychopaths, roughly the same as an incarcerated criminals.
So, Robin, from all that danger studying volcanoes, you went into the equally dangerous field of science journalism.
Yeah.
Why did you transition? What happened?
Well, I mean, I always loved all kinds of science. There's no kind of science that I think meh. And I enjoyed telling people about science and realized I actually quite enjoyed it more than I did conducting the science, because I'm quite impatient. And just writing about science to people, getting people to have that sort of childlike wonder again about things was just so much more satisfying. And then, I did some freelance stuff, and an advert randomly popped up for IFLS, and I applied kind of thinking they will never respond, and now I write for them, and it's brilliant fun.
So do you think there's something quite difficult about taking scientific things and turning them into articles? Is that something that's tricky, or does it come easily?
It depends on the subject, really. I mean, like, you know, I actually really enjoy writing about subjects that are completely outside my field of expertise, because it means you read up on it, you learn something, and then you have to explain complex terms, something like virology or something, in a way that you would have to understand as well, because you are then just the public, because you know, you don't understand what some of these terms mean, so you have to learn about them, be really careful about it, interview people. So when it comes to like writing about things that you have little idea about initially, it's actually a lot easier to communicate because you have to understand it. Actually, the difficulty is if you've studied something for 10 years or whatever, you know, something like earth science, trying to explain how climate change works without being bogged down in technicalities initially is a lot more difficult. But you get into... you know, you come up with a good analogy or something, and then you think, okay, I can use that now. So it takes practice, like anything really. But
yeah, I mean, something that really interests me, and I'd love to talk more about it, but unfortunately we're kind of getting towards the end of the show, and we need to get back to our puzzle, our riddle.
Yes.
So Miriam, what do we have, and let's have the answer.
So just as a reminder, the brain teaser was: a girl is at her mother's funeral and meets a guy who she immediately falls madly in love with. She doesn't get his name or his number at the time, but a few days later she murders her sister. Why?
I didn't get this. I was convinced the sister wants the guy, something like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So yeah, she wants to see the guy again.
Right, so she murders her sister, so there's another funeral, so the guy maybe comes. But and apparently...
It works, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's an idea. But if you came up with this answer, then you do maybe you have some psychopathic tendencies, because there's a certain level of cold logic that needs to get to that answer.
Yeah.
Well, Ron, thank you so much for joining us today. How can people get in touch with you and read some of your stuff?
If you go to ifls.com/meettheteam, you'll find me on there. My
myriad of articles, or find me at Squiggly Volcano, most ridiculous Twitter handle, I think. And get in touch with me there.
Yeah, and you can get in touch with us on at Science Mixtape, or search for Science Mixtape on Facebook. And if you like to listen again, you can find all our shows on Mixcloud, or look us up on iTunes or any other kind of podcast disseminating medium. And we're going to finish off with Robin's final choice, which is Gimme Shelter by the Rolling Stones. Why did you choose this one?
Because they are easily one of the best bands in the world, and this is their best song. If you don't like it, then you're crazy.